Hi everybody, I'm Schmanz. You can also call me by my actual name if you want to, but it's harder, so you can say Schmanz. I'm going to talk about package lint, but those of you who were at PackageSourceCon Basel will recognize a commonality in this talk and the talk that I gave there by the time we get to the end. The theme is similar, the way that I'm conveying the message will be a little bit different. So. So that's actually what's different. Last time that I talked about this eventual subject, I hadn't written any code yet. I was just suggesting some things that we should do, but not on the basis of anything that I had done. This time, it is. So why package lint? You know, it's not a fun piece of code. It's not the kind of thing that you think, I'm going to have a good time with package source today. I'm going to futz with package lint. No, that's not the first thing you think of. But there's a PR that has a whole bunch of bugs that are in package lint, some of which are kind of like meta bugs, like, of course it sucks at the following things. It's written in Perl badly, and it'll always have those bugs, and maybe we should rewrite it not in Perl. And that caught my attention. A couple of reasons. One, I've been writing in Perl a lot, and I can respect the fact that this isn't the best Perl I've seen. But I also am extremely skeptical about rewriting. If you read Joel Spolsky's writings, which are very often inflammatory but sometimes insightful, one of them, an old one, this was a story about Netscape, when they threw out everything and wrote Mozilla and were just kind of paralyzed for years with no product. We're not Mozilla, we're not those people, but it is probably still a silly idea to throw out package lint, especially because one of the problems with it is not totally understanding what it currently does. So it's hard to write a replacement without knowing that. So here are a couple quotes from Joel. I like the second one. When you do a rewrite, there's no reason to think that conditions will be better this time and that you're going to do a better job this time. That is false hope. So just a quick aside, this is just mechanics for how I wrote the code that is in this talk. I wanted to be able to work offline, because I was going to be offline a lot, including on the plane on the way here, and I wanted to be able to make some changes that were maybe beyond the bounds of what we might accept in case that I had a crazy idea and I wanted to try it. And then as soon as one of those ideas worked, I wanted to be able to commit it somewhere and basically get as much done as I could by the time I got here to this moment so that I could show it to you. Now, the intent is that the changes that I've made that I will show to you, I hope that they will be mergeable. I intend for them to be mergeable. I didn't want to have to gate making them on that decision. So in the meantime, I found a neat trick that I was able to make a little tiny Git repository around package lint itself without making package source as a whole be a Git checkout. I just made that piece be its own Git checkout. And then the master branch tracks CVS. And then I have a branch called Rehab that is where I'm doing my slightly crazy stuff. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But let's keep going. So why should I bother dealing with package lint? Because I've been dealing with Perl a lot at work and working on the wiki for NetBSD. And I know a trick that works really well for taking code that is hard to deal with and making it easier to deal with. And that's what we're talking about. What's it?
Sysutils wipe.
Yeah, that's definitely less code, and less code is easier. So you all know about test-driven development, but it's actually poorly named. It's not really about testing. It's just kind of incidentally about testing. It's really about design, which is one of the problems with package lint, that they didn't have one or has a bad one. And then also another thing TDD does just kind of incidentally, by virtue of these tests being executable, it seems like it tells you about the correctness of your program, and it does, although not to a provable extent. But this is why I like it, because even though I may not necessarily always be careful, skillful, or tasteful, the code that I write when I use TDD looks like it was. Which, yeah, so good for my reputation, such as it is. So I do TDD all the time with anything that I actually care about, that I have the slightest inclination won't maybe be thrown away immediately. Now, what we're going to have to do for package lint is test eventually development, which I just made up. We didn't write a test first, and it shows. We have a design that doesn't really make sense if there even was one. And there is documentation in there, but it is hard to find and incomplete and out of date because it's comments, and comments do that. So whether or not the PR is correct that we should do a rewrite, the first thing we have to do in any case is identify what the behavior of the program is. And it could be that once we know what it is, we like most of it, we'll change a little bit more, and then we're done. It could be that Perl is a bad choice of implementation language for some of the things we want to do. It could be that maybe it should be something that is built into package source so that it can have the same knowledge that the code it's testing has. Maybe not, but we can't know that yet. We really don't know. And so the first thing we have to do is get some tests around it that characterize what its behavior is. And it's never too late to test first. It's just harder the later you wait. So we have to retrofit it. Some of this stuff is in package source current and will be in the branch because I did send it to Thomas for review and we did put it in. But that's just the beginning. So what I did so far is a Perl testing technique for programs that you can make them look like they're modules, and then you can load them from another program as though they were modules and test their functions like units. So that was a very small conversion. I manually tested that the program still ran normally. I added a very small test script that you can use to drive the original. I hooked it into the package make file so you can run make test, and it'll do a build and then a test. And then I wrote a few tests, and I proved that when I broke the code out from under them, the test did fail. And we'll look at that in a second. So any, I'm kind of barreling through here. Any questions so far?
That's excellent.
Okay, cool. I like being around people that like this stuff. At work, there's a lot of resistance, so this is nice. Okay, so in my Git tree, which is not yet in package source, but I hope will be, the first thing that I did is a pattern called characterization tests, where you don't even know whether it's right behavior or wrong behavior. It's just what the behavior currently is, and you don't want to change it by mistake. You want to make sure that when you're refactoring, you know when you change the overall behavior of the system. You might have to decide, based on your judgment, whether that's right or wrong, but you don't want it to happen without noticing. So characterization tests at least document what you're discovering about what happens today. So I did that. I wrote some tests for a few packages that don't change very often and that package lint is likely to produce the same messages for over time. One is qmail. One is qmail run, which has slightly different error messages, and one is getmail, which doesn't have any. And so I actually test when I run the package lint command over those actual package directories. So they're slow tests. Do I get the expected error messages for each of those? So it's pretty hard with those tests running to make a mistake refactoring package lint that will really break it, like prevent it from doing checks that it was doing already. It probably won't happen. Then there were some easy wins in there. There were a bunch of package declarations in the Perl script that clearly wanted to be separate files and just weren't. The likely reason that they weren't is that if they're separate files, you have to deal with finding them at runtime. So I put them in separate files, and I added a build step that inlines them. Because I haven't yet proved, for instance, like maybe that's a performance issue. If we run package lint a zillion times in a bulk build or something, and I haven't proved what the performance currently is, and that finding it at runtime wouldn't be worse. So I'm not going to make that problem yet. And I also don't want to deal with where am I going to install these so that I can find them during the test, and where am I going to install them to find them after they're installed. So I just inline them, and so the result is the same script, but the code is not where you have to look at it to deal with package lint. Also, just mechanics of make test. It used to be true that if you were developing package lint, you had to comment out one variable definition and uncomment another one and change the path to wherever your package source checkout is. So all of that is fixed now. You can just run make test and make install and does all the things. Right, and then, okay, so the biggest annoyance that I found when I started to read the package lint code is that anytime you see a $0 in a Perl script, you should be skeptical. Why does it need to know where itself is? A little weird. It's okay if it's in a usage message or maybe a help or something, but it's not okay if it's reading itself as a file and grepping through it.
What?
Yeah, take a look. Yeah, that's a clue that somebody made a bad decision along the way and then got stuck with it. So I wanted to do something about that, and I very nearly have. So I added a test around what was being grepped for. It was looking for, there's a whole big block of if, else if, else if, else if, like 6-7 pages, that if it follows a certain regex pattern, that is a package lint internal type. It has a bunch of types internal to it, like yes, no, build link something. There's a whole long list. I'll show it to you. And it's grepping itself to see what those are. And I wanted to make sure when I fixed that, I didn't lose any of the types that it knows about. So I actually had it just diagnostically dump that entire list with the code as it was. And I made a test that bag compares all the types that it finds and all the types that I knew that I should expect. And now I can refactor that. So I started to. Instead of a huge if, else, now it's a dispatch table. It's substantially the same exact code. It was a very mechanical change. But I'm almost at the point where I could have that be a lookup in the table instead of a grep through my own source code at runtime. And then, hey, I found a bug as a result of that poor design decision, which was that there was an errant extra match in the regex in some place that it wasn't intending to. And it probably didn't hurt anything, but surprise, that wasn't a good choice. It led to a bug. I fixed it. So that's what's in my Git. Let's take a look. So here I am. I can do this, and then I can do this and prove to you that it's the same as what's in CVS. Okay. And then, oops. Here we go. So just first of all, a quick overview of what this looks like. Very little has changed. Some stuff in the make file has changed, and there's a couple new files. One of them is, excuse me, package-lint.t exists. And it's not huge, but it has some stuff. We can look through that in a minute. Another one is that there is a package lint directory, which is where I extracted those things that really wanted to be classes. They already were classes. They just wanted to be in separate files. So they're there. And then there's this little build.pl that stitches those together in line where they used to be in line, actually, in here. So everywhere there's a use statement here, these used to be inline declarations and definitions. And so my build script just replaces those with the contents of what used to be there.
How about just installing the modules?
We could. I didn't want to solve that problem yet because it's actually a change in behavior and I don't want to get into that. We could. I kind of left that for a later idea, but this was the minimal change to get the code out of my face and not think about it anymore. So there's that. Yeah, so that's what's new. And then in terms of the makefile, not very much changed here, except that there used to be something you had to comment out here if you were developing so that you could run whatever, you know, manual tests you wanted to. And then this makes it work both at developer test time and at install time. So I think the first thing to do is show you what the tests look like when they run. So if you're familiar with the Perl test harness situation, it's not very complicated. You run a T file, or you can run it through prove, and it gets formatted nicely. And that's all that's going to happen here. Yeah, and remember, some of these are actually running the package lint program against package directories, so there will be some slow tests. So that's OK. And then we can also run it a little more verbosely, so you can see what the tests are. Yes. Some of those look a little funny because they say warn and error. Those are the expected warns and errors that I want to match against to prove the package lint isn't broken.
So your tests will break if anyone fixes those packages?
Yeah, so that's right.
Don't do that.
That's right. Don't touch QML. That's my job. No, but seriously, that's actually by design. They are like full integration tests that assume end-to-end that these are the way things are, and that's why I picked packages that probably don't change very often, or package length that probably doesn't change very often. If it does, great, we just got to catch up the tests. I'd rather have that fail, you know, needlessly and spend a little time fixing it than not have that test and not realize that I broke something when I changed it. So that's the trade-off.
Yeah. What's a specific revision from package source repository on GitHub?
We could do that. These tests are already kind of slow, but we could do that. Maybe. Yeah. This was the easiest thing I could do to get some tests around it, and for sure. Right. In practice, this buys me plenty of time to keep working on it. So what would be interesting to see next, I guess, is a couple of the changes along the way. Does anybody have any questions about this so far? Or should we look at the test cases in detail? Is that a good way to do it? Yeah, okay. Okay. Here's a little comment about the thing that I don't like. But so there are 36 tests. I'm using a couple modules to help me out here. This is all Perl-specific stuff. In order to test any given subroutine in the real package lint program, I have this utility function in the test script called testUnit, which follows a pattern where I probably have a function, probably have some parameters I want to pass to it, and then I have an expected exit code in case the program exits, and then a regex for standard out, a regex for standard error that it should match. And this takes care of running those tests for the parameters that I want, no matter what the function is. And there's a really similar function here called test program that I haven't figured out how to share most of the implementation yet, but it should. But this actually is what I use to exec package lint and look at the result of that. Now we're looking at actual test cases. So this is the one I was just telling you about. This is a static list that I got from a diagnostic output of what those internal to package lint types are, so that I can change around how they get found to maybe not be looking at themselves and make sure that I get the same list. Once that refactoring is done, this is probably a silly test to keep. But to get me safely from where we are to where we should go, I want to be really sure. Because I don't totally understand what this code does. That's, you know, part of the problem here. So here's a bad compare of what I get back out of that call and what I expected in this literal list. So that'll fail if anything's missing from either side of that bag. That's what a bad compare is. This one is a more reasonable test. I'm just checking a couple examples of something instead of all instances of something. I don't know what this means very much yet either, but you have seen, if you've written the package source makefile, you've seen some of these variables maybe. And so this is... Right, this is package lint's kind of internal type system for what those variables represent, even though make doesn't do that. Interesting, right? This is an idea of something that I should do, so it's commented out. Maybe I'll get to it. This is how I test the main function of package lint. I kind of cook argv, and then I see what kind of things I get back from execing it. This should probably be changed to a temporary directory, but it works for now. And this is what I was talking about, that for QML run, when I run a real package lint over it, I should get something that looks like this, unless somebody fixes anything. Likewise for QML, and then getMail should come out looks fine, which is a nice result. And then I just run package lint over all of them, assuming that it's in this package source checkout that I'm in. And that's almost all of it. And then we just have a main function for the test that runs all of those. And when I'm in a hurry during the test development cycle, I'll comment some of those out. But this runs all of them. So that's what the tests look like. Any questions about that? Probably pretty reasonable. Anything else about how the tests or the code work before I go back to pontificating? Okay. So why does this matter? Certainly not because package lint matters a lot. I mean, it's a handy tool. It's part of our development cycle. Certain kinds of obvious mistakes it can tell us about. But it's not all that significant by itself. What's significant about it is it was an easy example for these techniques that I think we can apply more widely to something that does matter, which is the package source infrastructure code. And the reason that I think that matters more is that it is bigger and more complicated, so we all kind of need to agree that techniques like this could help us because we're going to have to work on it together. And the things that the package source infrastructure code does, some of them are unique. Some of them no other package system tries to do, like BuildLink. And the wrappers, I think, are still pretty unique. And in fact, we have a replacement implementation we might like to put in at some point. Yeah, it's easy for me to point fingers because I do so much work. So I'm proving that I could, I just haven't. But yes, I did. I did do that. And so once we have tests for how the wrappers currently work, we could easily see whether the replacements are as plug-in as we think they are. And in order to keep the valuable infrastructure code that we have, as complicated as it is, we have to understand its behavior, which is very difficult because of the mix of implementation languages that it has. It's hard to see the boundaries and seams between what make is doing, what set is doing, what awk is doing, like what global state is relied on in each phase. Those aren't visible because of the way that it's written. And so we need tests to help us untangle it. And we should have to untangle it because otherwise it's going to keep working like this forever and eventually it won't be relevant anymore. So the alternative to slowly but surely adding test coverage for package source infrastructure is worse, which is why I think we should slowly but patiently add tests for package source infrastructure. And we'll have to do it together. We'll have to do it slowly. But the reason that I'm giving a talk about package lint is that we can do it this way. There are ways to do it. Maybe it's not specifically the Perl test runner. Maybe we come up with something that uses ATF or QA. Maybe we don't. But the general technique of covering what we can figure out with tests and then being able to freely change it safely, I think we should consider that a very high priority for package source. I think it's something we should all be, you know, whenever we deal with something that touches the infrastructure and we take 5 minutes to understand exactly how it works so that we can make our change, that is the time to write a test case. And if you're not sure of the mechanics of doing that, ask someone, ask me, but make sure that that test case gets written. So that's the whole talk, and I just want to, this was the same exhortation that I made in Basel was, we should test package source infrastructure, but I hadn't done anything, now I've done a little bit, and I hope that I've proved that there's a way that we can move forward. And so I'd like to enlist your help, all of you, maybe even today if we have time, hacking later, or tomorrow if any of you are around, and certainly going forward we should have hackathons and work on this. So any questions?
So do you think that the political problem you're going to face with adding test cases to the infrastructure you talked about it a few seconds is that what test harness should you use? If you say I'm starting writing things in Perl, then people will say ew, Perl.
It's a fair question. Yep.
I think that whoever gets to implement it gets to decide.
Yeah.
It would be great. I mean, developing multi-arch was a real pain because it delved into BuildLink into every part of the infrastructure.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until trying to build random packages that I would see one small change break some really random package in some fun way. So it would be fantastic to have.
Independently of that, the Perl test harness works very well with tests that are not written.
Yes.
That is what I used for a lot of things already. I wrote some, for example, tests in shell that output the tab format, and that works very nice.
Yeah, there are nice tools you can use from the Perl ecosystem that can test software that isn't written in Perl, or tests that aren't in Perl. Yeah.
Pardon the naive question, but what exactly do you want to test in the infrastructure?
What it's doing.
We already have bulk perls.
Right.
If a package perl creates a successful binary package,
Yeah. Yes. That is a legitimate question, and there's a serious answer to it. The feedback cycle of finding out whether the change you made is okay is way too long, so people don't bother. And if we want to know exactly what breaks when we make a change, there have to be smaller, faster, tighter tests. Okay. So like when I was saying, I run package lint over a few real packages to see that they say the same thing, that's kind of like the bulk build. It's you draw a circle around the whole thing and make sure that the result is the same. But if something broke, you wish you had a smaller circle. So that's what it's about.
Well, I think that part of the problem is that many packages, we have very many packages that are simplistic, so that they don't invoke the most complex functionality.
That's true too. Yeah, you have to know which packages are going to exercise the likely mistake that you could have made, and then you have some percentage of certainty, but not certainty. Yeah.
The other problem is there are quite a number of ways to break the infrastructure that don't necessarily break package builds in a visible way.
Yeah.
Like the paths embedded in a binary or something.
Add a requested user. If the user already exists, you can completely comment out that part in the infrastructure and it won't be visible. I mean, look at all kinds of problems that started to appear with pbug when we made the environment a lot more bare bone than it was with the original bug build framework. And this can reappear all the time, so adding test cases is actually a valid request, basically unit testing.
Yeah, that's the thing. We have kind of a system test, which is to do a bulk build and hope that we'll notice whatever goes wrong. But package source is a combinatoric kind of a matrix of a lot of small pieces that overlap a lot and that we don't really see exactly how they interact. And to make it manageable and changeable quickly, like that a human can comprehend what they're doing and be pretty sure about it, we need a tighter framework around the functions that we have. And so more unit-like tests rather than more system-like tests. We have system-like tests. And so the tighter we can get that, the faster we can find out if we're wrong, which means the faster we can try things. Yeah. Anything else? Cool. Thank you.